care on both occasions, same health care on both occasions. So there's a system that does work. I certainly appreciate the fact that you've come forward with this resolution to try to make sure that workers are taken care of. And I hope that we don't lose sight of the target here. With all the testimony that you're receiving, that we don't lose sight that the workers are the target and they are the ones that need to be taken care of. Healthcare should be a right. It should not be a privilege. Each and every one of us has can get sick, befall an accident, have many crises that then may come across our path, certainly by no fault of our own. And so we definitely need to be protected by at least having health care. That's something that should be afforded everyone. I have a son, my youngest son, that has some blood disorders. And we almost lost him on at least two of the three occasions that he had to have emergency procedure at the hospital. If I wouldn't have had that health care, certainly we probably would have lost him. And certainly we would have been bankrupt because each time it, his visits to the hospital, ironically enough, we're about $42,000 on each visit. Certainly I don't have that kind of money, my wife or I. And like I say, we would have been bankrupt trying to make sure that our son stayed amongst the living. If you read today's Oregonian, you see on the front page, it talks about the fact that there are 17.9% of Oregonians that don't have health care. That's an increase of 13.3%. 13.1% of children don't have health care. That's an increase of 11.6%. The sad part of that is that most of those people are people that are employed, not the unemployed. I'd like to read a short excerpt from the article. Census Bureau analysts attributed the growing uninsurance rate to the decline in employer-based coverage for workers and their families. The percentage of Americans who get their health insurance through employer-based coverage dipped below 60% last year for the first time in decades. That trend also leaves growing numbers of dependent children without coverage, children who have no one to fight for them. The sharp rise in the cost of health care premiums increasingly squeezes the middle class. Full-time workers, not the unemployed, account for most of the growth in uninsured adults. So I certainly appreciate your efforts. I hope, again, that we don't lose sight that the target should be workers and their families who just want to go to work every day, do a job, and have their families taken care of as well in regards to health care. It should be a right, not a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Hi. My name is Rachel Solitaroff, and I'm the medical director at Central City Concern Health Services. I spend most of my time at the Old Town Clinic, which is our primary care site at Central City Concern. Old Town Clinic is a designated healthcare clinic for the homeless, though we serve a number of non-homeless but also low-income, uninsured, employed adults. We're an integrated healthcare clinic. We provide medical primary care, naturopathic care, primary and specialty mental health, and free pharmacy services for our clients. In the 2006-2007 fiscal year, we saw about 3,550 unduplicated medical clients. 63% of them were uninsured, and 81% were below 100% of the federal poverty level. Our uninsured clients come from two sources. Some come from within our agency, referrals from our recovery program or our community engagement program, and others are just uninsured people from the community. However, due to budget shortfalls in the past 4 months, we have been unable to take any new uninsured people from the Portland community at large. The best way to give you a sense of what our clinic does is to tell you some stories. I want to tell you about Alex. He's a 54-year-old man who also happens to work in construction, whom I met last July. And when I first met him, he came in, he had a big abscess on his arm from shooting heroin. He's a heroin addict, and his vision was blurry, and his feet were numb from very high blood sugar. It was impossible for him to continue to work at that point due to his addiction and his chronic illness. And he and his wife are also raising their two grandchildren. And I've been able to see Alex just about every month since then. He's been clean and sober for 9 months. His diabetes is under excellent control, and he's one of the most vigilant and attentive patients that I have. And now he's returned to work in construction. And I often wonder how many people out there are like Alex, but who can't get into our clinic because we can no longer afford to take them. Another patient, whose story is not so rosy, is someone named Alice. She's also in her 50s, also a severe diabetic with congestive heart failure. And for many years, she had a house, a child, a good job, and health insurance at Kaiser. And then one day, she fell down her stairs and she suffered a severe back injury, lost her job, and lost her health insurance. So by the time I met her, she had possibly the worst blood sugar I've ever seen. Her pain was out of control, and the bank was foreclosing her house. And she's had a much bumpier road. Her blood sugar is a little bit better. Her pain's slowly coming under control. She did sell her house. And I think ultimately we might be able to get her back into the workforce, but it's going to be hard for her to leave us and find a job that has insurance. So she's going to continue to stay with us, with or without employment. And what I'd like to see is Alice to move on and let another homeless person or another person in crisis take her spot, but there's no place else for her to go for health care. So my point is that a low-income and uninsured population, particularly one with chronic illness, is a dynamic and highly unstable one. One minute a person could be housed, employed, and without an addiction, but it doesn't take much for that person to slide and become homeless and struggling with their addiction again. And our clinic works extremely effectively for those who are vulnerable and can restore them to readiness for work. But the problem now is there's no other health care for them to go through. So we continue to provide this service for free and can't make room for people who are now at the bottom.
And I've had a chance to tour your facilities, and you do an amazing job with very little resources. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
Good evening. My name is Mike Waterfield. I've worked in construction for 21 years. For the last 5 years, I've worked as a heavy equipment operator with Operating Engineers Local 701. Throughout my career, I've always had health insurance, but I never knew how important it was until February 9th. I was snowboarding at Mount Hood. I crashed and hurt my left knee. I limped down the slope and through the parking lot because I wanted to go talk to my doctor. It was his day off, but the nurse told me to come see Dr. Kaiser in the same office and said, "We'll see you in 2 hours." I drove to Vancouver and limped into my doctor's office to see Dr. Kaiser. I told him what happened and what I felt. He looked at my knee, moved it, pulled on it, and said, "I don't think it's broken. You most likely have stretched or torn ligaments or tendons in your knee, probably an ACL. I said, "What do we do?" He asked, "What kind of insurance do you have?" I said, "I have good insurance." He went to the computer in the exam room, looked at my file, and says, "You have excellent insurance, so I'll refer you to an MRI. If my insurance had not been that good, he would have ordered an X-ray first, which Dr. Kaiser said would not show ligament or tendon damage. The MRI showed a complete tear of the ACL in my left knee. I was referred right away for orthoscopic surgery and was back to work in only 8 weeks. My family and I feel very fortunate that I was back to work so quickly and that my knee is completely healed. Thank you."
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. Carla.
Next three are Ken Piper, Tammy Wilkins, and Stuart Fishman.
And how many more after that?
About six more. Again, that's Ken Piper, Tammy Wilkins, and Stuart Fishman. How about Craig Honeyman?
Good evening. Thanks for being here.
Hi.
Please state your first and last name, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Stuart Fishman. I'm a grocery clerk and a rank and file member of United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 555. I don't represent Local 555 tonight, but I do support my union's effort to pass legislation that would require companies such as Walmart to provide adequate health care coverage for their employees and their employees' families. This proposed resolution is about whether Portland residents, as taxpayers and members of health care plans, should continue to subsidize companies that do not or cannot provide adequate health care for employees and their families. If we had a rational health care system that provided basic and portable health care for everyone, this wouldn't be an issue, as you said earlier. But it is an issue, and I think this resolution is a step in the process of reforming our health care system. I and three other rank-and-file Local 555 members circulated a letter at our workplaces in the last couple of days. 10 members who are Portland residents signed the letter, and with more time, I'm sure we would have gotten more signatures. And in conclusion, I'd like to read some parts of this short letter. We are grocery workers. We know that companies like Walmart do not provide affordable and adequate health care for employees and their families. These employees and their families may qualify for public assistance paid for by taxpayers, or they may not be able to pay for treatments they receive, especially at hospital emergency rooms. And those unpaid bills are then passed on to our health plans, and we pay for them through increased premiums or increased copays or through reduced service. These employees may also wait longer to seek treatment, thus increasing not only the severity of their medical problems, but also the cost of treating them. In an article in the Northwest Labor Press, August 3rd, stated, quote, last year an informal union conducted a survey of employees of construction contractors doing business with the city, found that only about a third had employer-provided individual health coverage, and less than 5% had employer-provided coverage that included their families, end quote. And therefore, we're concerned that low-bid contractors providing inadequate employee health care and working on projects paid for by the city cost residents more in the long run than higher-bid contractors who provide adequate health care for employees and their families. And therefore, we urge that the City Council pass this resolution. And I'd also like to add that I'm a cancer survivor, and I know that without union health care coverage, I would have lost my house and just about everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very well said. Good evening.
Hello. My name is Tamara Wilkins. I'm a 38-year-old single mother. About 2 years ago, I found out I was pregnant, and at the time, my significant other was working in the construction industry with a company that didn't carry health insurance. When I found out I was pregnant, I had to go to Planned Parenthood for confirmation because we didn't have any medical provider at the time, and things at home really got rocky from there. We had some domestic issues to begin with, but his income was too much for any kind of public assistance, and he didn't work steady enough to finance the medical costs of a pregnancy or childbirth. The stress increased. It ended up leading towards violence. I ended up having to send my son to my mother's house to ensure his safety, and I chose to leave that environment even though I had nowhere to go. I became homeless, ended up miscarrying. Without insurance, I had to access emergency room care for the hospitalization behind the miscarriage and the procedures that were necessary. I didn't have very much work experience and no education, so I was transit for several months. Soon after I became homeless, my hands crumpled up with a very painful condition that I thought was carpal tunnel. Once again, I had to access medical care through the emergency room several times, like four or five times, and they kept telling me I needed a referral to a specialist to diagnose carpal tunnel for treatment, but without insurance, no specialist would see me. So I kept being sent away. After several months of dealing with this pain, I heard there was a chiropractic clinic downtown that saw walk-in patients for free, which Western Chiropractic Clinic. I had suffered spinal damage during a beating at home, so I went to see if the pain in my hand was caused by spinal damage. They did some x-rays when I got there, and they said there was no spinal damage to explain the pain, so they did some blood tests to see if it was rheumatoid arthritis. What they discovered is that it was arthritis, and it had become debilitating at that quick of a rate because I became homeless, and it was the dead of winter. It was the extreme cold that caused my hands to crumple up to the point where I couldn't even barely use them. Since that time, I've been allowed to access medical care and housing through Central City Concern and the Mentor Program. And while receiving these services, I've been able to pursue an education to become employable. Eventually, I will support not only my son, but my disabled mother as well. I'm in my second term at PCC pursuing a year certificate in website development. I will eventually have to address the enormous amount of medical expense I accumulated during that brief period of time I was homeless, but for now the best I can do is maintain my education and postpone employment until I'm prepared to either file medical bankruptcy or arrange a payment plan to resolve my debt issues. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Really appreciate it. Great.
Members of the council, good evening. Commissioner Leonard, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I don't for a minute think you're as old as Commissioner Adams suggested you were before you arrived this evening. My name is Craig Honeyman, and I'm the executive director of the Associated General Contractors Oregon Columbia Chapter.
You only have 30 seconds.
Yeah. We're a, I expected that.
I'm kidding.
I will abbreviate the description of AGC. I believe most of you know who we are, but we do represent contractors who are both union and open shop and of all sizes in the industry. I'm here this evening to oppose items 1035 and 1036 on the agenda. On the surface, the substance of these ordinances appear benign, a study to try and expand options for employers to provide full family health care benefits. And obviously, this is one of the most challenging individual and business and economic issues we face in the country today. Witness the testimony we've heard this evening. We support the notion, AGC does, of available and affordable health insurance options. Every day we work with our contractors to provide health care benefits through the AGC Health Benefit Trust that today insures more than 10,000 lives in the construction industry, and it's a program that's growing. We're proud to provide innovative products that make health insurance affordable option for our members. However, underlying these ordinances is a potential for a set of contract specifications that flies in the face of Oregon prevailing wage law and could be harmful to small employers. Oregon's current prevailing wage law requires payment of both wages and fringe benefits, and at this point I'd like to correct a staff statement made earlier. It's my understanding that prevailing wage law applies to projects over $50,000, not over $750,000. There might be a confusion with the recent legislation passed in Salem relative to public-private partnerships. Attached to my testimony are a couple of pages out of the current BOLI prevailing wage book. As you can see, contractors are required to pay both base wage and a separately calculated fringe benefit. When contractors are surveyed each year to determine their prevailing wage, they report wages and benefits separately. When a contractor is working on a prevailing wage job, he or she must pay the base wage and may offset the fringe benefit payment by providing health care and other benefits to their employees. If a contractor doesn't provide health insurance or other fringe benefits at the level that's required, then the contractor must pay the fringe benefit directly to the worker in wages. This would enable the worker to choose to obtain benefits on their own or to supplement any benefits the worker is able to access through a spouse or other means. Any mandate that would add to the requirement already laid out under the prevailing wage law we think would be excessive and unnecessary, would place a burden on small employers who may only occasionally venture into the public works marketplace. The regulation on contractors who do public works is already cumbersome. To dictate what kind of health care benefits those contractors should provide would create another barrier to entry, we fear, and would drive some contractors away to bidding for projects for the city. So we urge you not to adopt an ordinance that would lead to such regulation. Let me say, in conclusion, as I see my time is up.
I'm giving you extra time.
Okay. That what I'm testifying against tonight is a study. And a study with a presumed outcome. Neither I nor AGC are closed-minded. And if you do decide to pass this ordinance, I want to pledge to you the commitment of AGC to provide whatever factual information and data you need or the consultant needs to conduct this study. To that end, in the resolution, there's a reference, at least the copy I have, to an Oregon Insurance Division of the AGC. We don't have a division as such. I would suggest the reference just be to AGC. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Well, I want to thank you for being here tonight, and you and I have known each other for many years, and you're a very honorable and able representative. My joke was about the fact you told Randy, I told the audience, that he was 87 years old before he got here, not the fact that you're from AGC. the resolution has been the product of many months of conversations among a variety of stakeholders, and there's nothing in it that precludes anything moving forward, and there's nothing in it that mandates anything moving forward. What it is fact-finding about the issue. There's a lot of passion in this room. There's a lot of passion around the city and elsewhere to try to address this issue. And with the city's potential pooling power and buying power, the idea of providing employers and employees access with our potential heft as a partner of providing more options for healthcare, I'm just not clear about your fear. So if you could tell me, what is there anything specifically in the ordinance that causes you to be fearful, or is it just sort of, I'm looking for facts here. What about bringing the facts to the surface cause you such fear, or your organization such fear?
Well, I guess what I pledged in the conclusion of my remarks is my willingness to develop some facts for you, at least as they relate to the ADC membership, 30% of which is union, our union contractors, which do about 50% of the work in this market. The balance, obviously, are union contractors, and the data on them is not as readily available. Obviously, the union contractors, both for their management and their field employees, offer health insurance. My concern, again, not to presume an outcome on the study, but I guess I do a little bit, is outlined in my statement, the concern about the impact this will have on small businesses and their willingness to bid city work, and the possible duplication of a healthcare system that's already in place under the prevailing wage law.
And I would pledge to you then, and I think has been true of almost all the conversations I've had with all parties, is, you know, we're interested in getting the facts. And we're interested in looking at the options. And I don't think anyone should fear the fact-finding and optioning from there. But I do respect and hear what you're saying.
We will assist you, sir.
Thank you very much. Carla.
The next three are Ted Gleichman, James Posey, and Ed Kaul, K-A-U-L, I believe it is.
Good evening.
What about Bev Logan?
Welcome to the Portland City Council. Mr. Posey, would you like to go first?
I think he's ready to organize. And, of course, ladies are first here. So.
Good evening, commissioners. I'm Ted Gleichman. I'm a member of Redeemer Lutheran Church and the Interbeing Spiritual Center. And I'm here to speak to the issue of level playing field. One of the most common and least analyzed business metaphors. I've provided copies of my written testimony and want to give you a synopsis of that. However, first, I would like to applaud Ms. Birch's comments for NAMCO in the spirit of struggle and the expression of frustration and even anger that I heard in her words. I believe it's important that we all understand that race cannot be separated from the issue of healthcare in America. From the Tuskegee experiments in our past to the recent work that's been done on the issue of medical apartheid, all of us who support this ordinance and this proposed study also, I am sure, support the effort of outreach to people of all races and ethnicities that's necessary to make this doable in a healthy way. And I believe that this is doable, but I don't believe that it will be easy. Let me note my own background. I have more than a decade of experience on the other side of the table from NAMCO and AGC in purchasing, procurement, contracting, and supply. Had two national certifications in governmental purchasing and two awards for outreach to minority and women-owned businesses. I've worked with businesses of all sizes and in all industries. But the metaphor of a level playing field is not a metaphor for all seasons. If your competitor offers you a level playing field and your sport is snowboarding, that person is not necessarily doing you a favor. My point is that any metaphor can be overextended, and that's a common issue in these kinds of business difficulty discussions. One general economic arena where it does apply, though, is that of economies of scale. Small businesses, and most but not all minority businesses, qualify can be at a particular disadvantage in their relative inability to aggregate purchases for maximized cost savings based on economies of scale. But it's important to note that this disparity exists primarily in commodities, specialty goods, and other manufactured products. For these areas, economies of scale are a real challenge, and small businesses generally do not have a level playing field. The issue can also apply in aggregation of services, but to a lesser degree. General, non-professional, technical, and certain professional services can usually be had somewhat more cheaply from a large business, all other things being equal, because of the cost reductions associated with overhead, not a cost reduction associated with the base price of labor, especially, of course, in a prevailing wage regime. That is, there is no economy of scale in pure baseline labor costs in such contracts. That is why applying a prevailing wage requirement is, in fact, a boon to small businesses. It eliminates a huge area where large businesses might otherwise compete, and therefore often significantly levels the playing field.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
But we're very well spoken, and we have the written remainder of your remarks.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Good evening.
I'm Beverly Logan. I live in Southeast Portland, and I'm a member of St. Andrew Church in Northeast Portland. I'm also a leader with the Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good. My comments are my own comments, however. Sort of. I've been part of some of the teams that have met with you three commissioners to discuss the proposal that MACG had put forward. And so I guess I'd like to straighten out that while workers are a target of our efforts, the target is healthcare access in our community and increasing that, not just for workers, but for all the residents. We recognize that there's a burden of providing insurance that employers have. We also recognize there are restrictions of current laws, and we've taken those things into consideration. we also, I've heard just in the last few weeks that the resolution has changed dramatically. I've heard leaders from MACG express an interest in working with minority contractors to try to help level the playing field disparities that they experience. But we still are interested in keeping or producing a level playing field for responsible contractors who do provide insurance or health care for their employees. And for those who, for whatever reason, find that too burdensome, and obviously there's reasons why that's difficult for small businesses, we're interested in finding a way to help them either work with the city, stand with them, and working with the city to find some remedies for those difficulties. I guess Andre Ba had said earlier that everybody in the room is probably for healthcare, and I would just add to that that I suspect everyone in the room is probably for supporting minority contractors. But I guess I would just ask that you not wait until those disparities have been remedied perfectly before we start doing something bold to address the needs in terms of healthcare in our community. Concentric circles sounds like a long time coming. We want to see workers provided with healthcare access, but also other residents of our community. And those who don't receive insurance through their employers still should have greater access through our clinics if that's what they have to rely on. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony and your work on this issue. Mr. Posey.
Thank you very much. My name is James Posey. I'm the president of NAMCO, National Association of Minority Contractors, and let me ask a procedural question. I have a letter here from Joanne Bowman, Oregon Action. May I read that? Will that intervene on my time, or should I just submit the letter?
Our protocol is to just submit the letter.
Okay, I will submit the letter, but suffice to say that Joanne Bowman is no slouch on this issue, and her comments are well taken. Let me just say that the comments of Faye Birch really represents in a very sincere way NAMCO's position on this issue. And there's really nothing I could add to that. The thing that I really want to talk about with my time is this process. I'm concerned that we as citizens of Oregon be truthful. We know this is not about health care. This is about empowering unions and about focusing on unions and their intervention in the city. And it's a sad thing for me to sit here and watch as a citizen of this community, watch these church people. By the way, a lot of Catholics here, I'm wondering where are the Baptists, the Presbyterian, and the Pentecostals. Be that as it may, my concern is that we really tell the truth. You all are focusing on contractors, and you all know for a fact that health care is a larger issue. I have a deli. I have employees that come here, work at minimum wage, and I would like to pay them health care also. This is a broader picture than just contractors, and I wish we would just tell the truth. We're using this process, the resolution, as a backdoor approach to really already making a decision in many ways, because in honesty, over the last 2 years, while you guys have been studying this, you haven't involved us in any material way. I'm talking about the broader community. You've had the union people here. 701, incidentally, is one of the agencies or one of the unions that we had to sue 10 years ago for not allowing a black woman to get her journeyman level. So there are a lot of inequities here. There's a lot of dynamics here that saddens me. And I wish that these people from MACG would really evaluate what they're doing and why they're doing it. And with that being said, the whole process of having a evaluation or some organization looking at this from a from the standpoint of telling us what the facts are, that should have been done. That should have been the first element in this process as opposed to the last element in this process. So I'm sort of saddened that we're sitting here talking about health care when we really are not talking about health care. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Posey.
The last person who signed up is Cliff Puckett.
Is Mr. Puckett available? Hi, Cliff.
Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Cliff Puckett. I'm a representative for the Carpenters Union here in Portland. And I'm here tonight to talk to you about health care. As you can see, this is a community issue. This room is filled. The majority of these people in this room probably are not construction workers, but they are all concerned about health care. And serious reform for health care for not just construction workers, but all members of our community. This has been a long process that we've been working on this. MACG has been a huge part of it. The majority of MACG is not labor, is not construction workers. But they see the impact of what a better healthcare system can do to help improve this community. I would ask you to take another look at the amendments put forth before you tonight. And consider how a broader reach would help. That's been looked at over the last year and a half by groups, including MACG, NAMCO was a part of it, on considering how we can not just affect construction workers on these projects, but make it touch the lives of all the citizens of Portland. So please, take one more look at that and see if there's something we can do about it tonight. There's some concern that by sending this to a committee, it's going to go there to die. That's not what anybody in this room wants. We've heard it from a couple different groups tonight that are set to be on that committee that have made it clear they do not want to see a change in the process. They're happy with the status quo. We need people on this committee that have a determined goal to make a change, to make something better. That's all the amendments that MACG put forward tonight are really asking for. Set a goal that we want this to change. There's enough smart people in this room, in this city, that can be on this committee to figure out a way to get something better than what we have now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, a couple of thoughts. You have all had an opportunity to hear some of the conversation among stakeholder groups that has existed and been part of the reason that this process has been 2 years. There is a question of trust among certain stakeholder groups. And in terms of my proposal, our proposal that we put forward is to do the basic research in the light of day with a timeline. And if my colleagues can tell you, I work hard to stick to the timelines that we put forth, but to do the kind of research with folks around the table so that it's done in the light of day. I think everyone in this room would like to have an impact on all the uninsured in the city of Portland. I think the way to start for the city government, which is not responsible directly for the general provision of general health care in the community, which is a county service, is to at least start with our own contracted workforce. And as we do that, we will learn a lot about the bigger issue in the community. So that remains, I absolutely hear you, that remains part of your aspirations, it remains part of our aspirations. And what I would like to do is to move this conversation forward together with a fact-finding effort. And in the process, my hope is to try to build some bonds of trust among the many stakeholder groups that as a city commissioner and as a city council, we need to hear and we need to consider. So I do appreciate the additional amendments that you've brought forward. My preference would be is to move forward with the resolution. It's the differences, move forward with the resolution that we have before us, that we have worked on, and in the process, hopefully, make an impact on the bigger, wider problem of lack of health care in our community, in our state, and in our nation. But it is now time for council conversation.
Are we ready for the roll call?
Okay. If there's no conversation, we're ready to vote.
Adams?
Again, I want to thank Kimberly Schneider, Terry Richardson on my staff. I want to thank Jeff Bauer and the folks at Purchasing, wherever you're at. I want to underscore my thanks to Cherry, who has been great about being accessible to me and my staff. And thank you all. I really look forward to the next 5 and 6 months to see what we can really do to help real people get access to some real good health care. Aye.
Leonard?
It is just so difficult to change the status quo on anything, and Cherry used a good example with the biodiesel ordinance. There are numerous others. Eric Sten's work on housing for the homeless, Sam Adams' work on transportation funding. You just go down the list, and when you start working on this stuff, you quickly realize why nothing ever gets done, because that's the safest place to be, is to do nothing. And when you actually propose to do something different, like provide health care for people that don't have it, the reasons why you shouldn't do it vary from it costs too much to apparently even religion. And I respect the work Sam has done on this a lot, and I appreciate how hard Sam works on these initiatives and balances them. And I'm very reluctant at the last minute to come in and second guess something Sam is working on, because I honor the work and in fact the comments he just made really were getting to the question I had, which was, shouldn't we make this a broader analysis and look, because it is a difficult subject, see what the various options are. But I think his explanation makes sense, and I think it is in my mind, the first step, and maybe a multi-step process that we would probably engage in over a period of time to try to get to really the more fundamental issue, and that is, how do you provide access to the healthcare system, as people have so eloquently said here tonight, for people that don't have it? I mean, that's the real question. It's not about unions, and it's not about anything but making sure human rights and dignity are honored in the United States of America. which, by the way, is done better in other countries than we do, and that's shameful. It should not be. But that's, we all know that's the problem. The solution is difficult to find, obviously. And so I want to support Sam in his efforts. I want to look very much at this as the first step in a many-stepped process that I think all of us working together can achieve. And I mean all of us. I don't mean just the people who are interested in the healthcare, but those that will be impacted by the cost of that. I think there are things we can and should do to help them as well. I mean, this shouldn't be a one-sided conversation, they pay or don't pay. I mean, I think all of us have a stake in this. And so, again, I appreciate this work very much. It was excellent testimony tonight. I very much enjoyed the heartfelt nature of what some of you said. I hope you are doing well, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Stan.
Well, I want to thank Cherry and Ben and Ed and the team that have been working on this for a long time. I want to specifically thank the individuals who came and told of your hard struggles. I think it's not easy to sit up and do that, and I think it makes a huge difference. So thank you for being that courageous. I'm obviously going to support moving forward. I think there is this is a tough topic in general, and this initiative itself, I've sat in, you know, not nearly a hundredth of the meetings that many of you have, but a few meetings trying to think this through. And I think we've got it narrowed to the point where we can get somewhere. I think there is room to talk about the issues that were brought up about who all could access a pool and other things. I think there's room to talk about how broad it should be defined. But I think if we can get it right in the way that Sam has described it, it will be a lot easier to add things because we'll actually have something that's working. And it's one of these things where it broadens very quickly. I also hate to say, but I want to be clear with something I think everyone will agree with. We have no chance of solving healthcare in the City Hall chambers. It's a national issue, and I hope and you will join me in continuing to push this into the presidential election where it truly belongs. We need universal healthcare coverage. It's absolutely affordable. In fact, credible people think it can be provided for the same amount of money we're spending on the current system if we do it right. So that's really the push. That being said, working at a local level, I often could give that speech about just about any topic. We should, you know, have help to do all sorts of things. And meanwhile, if this effort gets one person the healthcare coverage that allows them to avoid some of the tragic, unnecessary pain that we've heard about tonight, then it's well worth the effort. So I think we cannot solve this. We've got to keep focused on the big picture. But meanwhile, I think we can, through this effort, get some more people some health care and make a dent that isn't symbolic, because it's real lives that are at stake, you know, and everyone is important. So I also want to end by thanking Commissioner Adams. He has had several initiatives, for those of you who are here all day, that are very difficult and has brought them successfully to us. I wish it were finished tonight, but this is actually the piece that will allow us to be finished. And so, again, I want to thank everyone. Your activism is terrific. There are questions to be answered, and I look forward to trying to answer them with you and coming to some conclusions. Hi.
Congratulations, everybody. The resolution passes. We're on our way. And unless there's council objection, then we'll withdraw the 10 whatever, whatever.
1036.
Right. Thanks. Thank you.
It works out. Right?
I sure will. Thank you.
Great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I got it. Yeah, this is the one I didn't have. Okay. Thank you. You too. That was the final one there. Yep, you're welcome. Yes. Mm-hmm. Hi, Bill. How are you? I'm good. Oh, thank you.